It's the Painless Living Show with host and pain treatment expert, Dr. Cassaro, and co-host, Dennis Bergmeier. If you or someone you love suffers from chronic pain, get answers here. Call now, 888-440-4442. That's 888-440-4442. Or visit us online, painlesslivingradio.com.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, too.
How are you?
Welcome to the Painless Living Show. We're back in the studio live this week after a brief vacation break.
Very brief.
Yes, too brief.
You always choose the shortest week to take a vacation, no matter when it is. It always turns out that way.
That's been my luck.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how that works, but it does. Consistently.
Seems to be. Wish I could pick a lottery number that way.
So, you feel good?
Oh, yes. Rested and ready.
Gotcha. Back at it. Ready to go.
Back
Full
at
speed
it.
Speed ahead.
And that's a nice segue into the today's show. We're back at it.
That's it. We are talking about low back pain and the ramifications and the causes and the fixes.
That's right. We figured that there's probably one or two people out there in the audience that have back pain.
Mm-hmm. Those people can jump on now at 888-440-4442 and address your problems directly with Dr. Cassaro.
Yeah, the statistics are that at some time, virtually all, 95%, adults have a prolonged bout of low back pain. Now, for most of those people, they're not the ones we're talking to because their prolonged bout of back pain gets better and then they probably don't have any more problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the people whose back pain either keeps coming back or never goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people we want to talk to today.
Right. At 888-440-4442. Write it down. Give us a holler.
That's right. Here. And the goal is to give information that people can use at home to help themselves or to steer them in the direction where they can get professional information or treatment that they may not be getting so far.
The causes, and again, it gets very confusing for those of us who are not directly associated with the medical profession, but it's hard, almost very confusing to know that your back pain doesn't necessarily come from a problem in your back.
It usually does, but you're right. It doesn't necessarily have to. There's one of the things that can cause back pain is what's called referred pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you have a problem somewhere else, but you feel it
in the back.
In your back.
Yep.
And there's a lot of things that can fall into that category. A lot of women on a monthly basis get back pain associated with menstrual cramping or something like that.
Right.
People with ulcers, a lot of times their only symptom might be pain in their back.
Which is, again, very confusing and doesn't make sense when you...
Well, that's just to keep you on your toes.
And staying on your toes can cause lower back pain.
As a matter of fact, it can, especially if you're using high heel shoes to help stay on your toes.
Right. A lot of us have the symptoms of back pain, but it comes very briefly, and it comes from maybe standing too long or walking too far, bad shoes. You just mentioned high heels, but even, you know, guys in shoes that don't fit properly or maybe don't support themselves sufficiently can suffer.
You know, you look at people that make their living on their feet, and just for an example here, I'm going to use construction work.
Mm-hmm.
Look at them. Of all of the equipment that they buy, their tools, their clothing and everything, look at what's usually the most expensive.
It's the boots.
They put their money into their boots, and they know, because if their feet hold up throughout the whole workday, day after day, week after week, the rest of their body will do just fine.
Yeah. And that's something that I think salespeople need to do, you know, because you sit there and you want to look sharp, but fashion is not necessarily conducive to good health.
Fashion is conducive to business, especially in my business.
In your business, exactly. What are the probably the most predominant causes that you see in your office?
Lifting, yes. Injuries from lifting. You almost always lifting improperly. On occasion, lifting too much, but lifting improperly is far more frequent cause of back pain than lifting too much.
Yeah, people who know how to lift properly, you can watch them do it. They do it primarily with their leg muscles, do they not?
Well, and they also keep whatever they're lifting up close to their body, mm-hmm. and they don't turn or twist.
There you go.
And that's one of the reasons that brings up one of the reasons that I see a lot of new grandparents in here in my office is lifting up a 20-pound 3-year-old uh-huh. is not the same as lifting a 20-pound bag of dog food.
Right. Whoops.
That's right. That dog food doesn't kick and scream and squirm.
Right, yeah. And you have to be a little more careful with the child than with the dog food. I mean, you drop dog food and it's just, you know, get a broom and a dustpan.
You just have to beat the dog to it.
That's right. What's the technique? Someone walks into the office with lower back pain. Is there a bunch of questions you have to ask first to try to get in your head what the problem is?
Oh, you mean after we ask about insurance?
Yeah. Well, that's always the first question.
Actually, yeah, there are. There's a lot of routine questions that go into it, but the biggest thing isn't the questions, it's the answers. My approach is pretty much the approach that I take here on the radio mm-hmm. when people have a pain problem is I just let them talk and I listen, because most of the time, if you don't cut the person off with another question and another question, they'll tell you mm-hmm. what the information is that you need to hear that you might not always get if you just keep firing questions. But in addition to that, physical examination. Okay. It's incredibly important. It hasn't lost its importance over hundreds or, I guess, thousands of years. But because of the way that things work in the medical profession these days, it's getting to be far and far less emphasized. Mm-hmm. And more of the emphasis is on the results of tests.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate, because a good thorough physical examination is the best way to augment the information the patient gives to come up with either a diagnosis or a collection of possible diagnoses, and then you can do the testing to help figure out which one of those is most likely.
At what point should a patient or a potential patient or a person who is suffering for or experiencing, I guess a better word, lower back pain, actually decide to take some sort of professional action? Is a lot of us just, you know, the back starts to hurt and you go, oh, I must strained a muscle, or I lifted too much, or I worked too hard, I'm just going to lay down here for a while and take it easy for a couple days and everything will be fine.
Well, and most of the time that's probably the correct thing to do.
Okay.
You probably don't need a doctor for that. In fact, they've done a lot of studies that show that for most bouts of back pain, if you do absolutely nothing, within 2 weeks they go away completely without any treatment. Of course, 2 weeks is a long time if the back pain is bad enough where it keeps you from going to work.
Yeah. Or getting to sleep or
I'd
sitting
say
comfortably.
Or that's the answer to your question.
Yeah.
Is that when it gets to the point where you can't go to work, you can't sleep, you can't do your normal daily activities like tie your shoes, that's probably when it's time to at least see somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that it's time to jump onto the operating table by any means. Most of the time, non-invasive treatments, some physical therapy, chiropractic manipulation, maybe a little bit of traction, mm-hmm. things that you can do at home like an inversion table, those are the things that are going to get most people relief of that kind of pain.
Gotcha. You know, one of the things I probably should have asked a few moments ago when you said that lifting is the major cause that you see here, is that usually because of a muscle strain, or do you do more severe damage to, like, vertebrae, discs, other things if you lift improperly? I mean, how badly can you hurt yourself internally from lifting improperly?
Oh, you can. How bad can you hurt yourself? You can do some serious damage, but most of the time it's not serious. It's like you were talking about. It's a muscle strain or a ligament or something like that. What can happen, though, is what most people look at as the hallmark of a severe injury is when you injure a disc, especially if you injure it enough where it ruptures and the contents from the center of the disc come out, kind of like squeezing toothpaste out of a tube.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you've got a serious back injury. You've done damage that's probably permanent at that point. Under the best of conditions, it's never going to go back to the way it was before that injury. But that doesn't mean it has to hurt forever.
Right.
It can still go back to being non-painful, and that's what's most important to most people.
Yeah.
Is just get it back where it doesn't hurt, doesn't keep me from working.
Yeah. And I also, maybe you can clear this up, because I've heard conflicting suggestions. When you suffer from back pain, do you get a hard mattress or a soft mattress?
Yes.
Thank you for clearing that up.
Anytime. Most of the time, a firm or extra firm mattress is going to be a better choice. In fact, in the old days, what they used to tell people when you injured your back was sleep on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a good hard surface. You're going to get a lot of support. It's not designed for comfort.
Right.
It's designed for keeping you from re-injuring your back in your sleep. The problem with a soft mattress, and it's hard to explain over the radio because we don't have visual help, but you sink in on a soft mattress, which means that the places that hold your weight up is when you can't sink any further.
Yeah.
So you've got your body hanging from the points that won't sink instead of your body resting on the points that are down. Okay?
That makes sense.
So instead of, if you're laying on your back, instead of your weight resting on your bottom and your shoulders, your bottom and your shoulders sink in and your weight is hanging from your low back. And that just kind of adds to the problem instead of helping to correct the problem.
Even though it might, at the moment, feel like you're being cradled much more securely than you would be on a hard mattress.
Well, it will when you're laying there.
Right.
Wait till you have to get out of that bed in the morning.
Yeah.
That soft bed, you're going to feel like you need a crane to pull you up out of bed.
And you actually might. It couldn't hurt.
That's one of the things, you know, years ago, probably in the 1970s, I guess, when water mattresses got to be really popular. They were advertising them as being really good for people with back problems.
Yes.
And people with back problems would lay down on that heated water mattress, and they'd feel great. And I think most of what was making them feel good was actually the fact that it was
heated.
Okay. But what would happen in the morning is they couldn't get out. They couldn't move. They couldn't roll over during the night because it would be excruciating pain.
Yeah, I used to have to have somebody push on one side of it to help, like, bump you up.
Create a wave and have you surf off.
That's right. And another question that confuses most of us, heat or cold?
Yes.
I see why we're confused now.
I'm not confused. Well, usually, and this is a rule of thumb, after an acute injury, ice.
Okay.
At least for the first 24 hours. After that, usually heat. Now, if you've got chronic back pain, I've got a lot of patients that I see in my office that have had back pain for years, and they do better with ice. And it's long more than 24 hours. I mean, they're talking years. So if ice works better for you, use the ice. But for most people, heat is better. That's why heating pads sell so well.
Cool. All right. Back pain is the topic. You want to jump on in, questions, comments, or whatever, it's 888-440-4442. Love to hear from you and help you out today.
We'll be back right after the break.
To learn more about the topics or products mentioned on the program, visit our website, PainlessLivingRadio.com.
Back pain, the topic of the program this morning.
Yes, your back pain, to be specific.
Now, I've been called a pain in the neck, but never a pain in the back. But
any lower?
Yeah, a lot of us have it. A lot of us, especially weekend warriors. You know, those who go out and play softball, golf once a month or whatever. Lower back tends to really suffer the lasting consequences of that.
Usually, yeah. Every once in a while, you'll see someone with their shoulder or something like that. But by and large, all the weekend warriors come back Monday with an aching back.
Yeah. What would you suggest we do to alleviate that? Or I would imagine that were we to exercise properly beforehand, sleep and eat right would seem to be the three magic cures for almost anything.
You don't need me here. What you said first about exercising on a regular basis is probably the biggest thing to prevent the weekend warrior problems. But if you're riding a desk all week and then it's on hard. The weekend, yeah. You go out and you do all the work around the house and the yard work and help the neighbor build his deck and stuff like that. Well, that's when you end up having the weekend warrior problems. You can't do all that stuff when you're sitting at your desk Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. But what you do before you go to work and after you get off work can make a big difference on what happens on right. the weekend. And all too often what happens is we get into a daily grind, especially, you know, you get your career going and then you start a family and then you have other pressures and other demands on your time. And you feel pretty good. You feel like everything is holding up, and you tend to think that I'm still in the same condition I was in 15 or 20 years ago.
That's right.
And you're really not, and it'll take just one episode like that on a weekend to remind you.
Very definitely remind you. But are there any lasting consequences? Well, let me rephrase the question. Does sitting in an office chair do to your back what working consistently on a computer can do to your wrists?
Similar. Sitting is one of the worst postures, probably the worst posture for your back, your whole spine, back, neck, everything. But the world kind of revolves around sitting these days.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it even more important what you're doing outside work. So if you sit all day at work and then you go home and sit in front of the television, you're just compounding that instead of doing something to help to keep it from being as significant.
What about lumbar supports, office chairs? Is that just a way to get you to buy a new office chair, or does it actually do something positive?
No, they actually do something positive, but a big part of that is just a way to get a new office chair, because the better way would be to have to be able to consciously or unconsciously hold your posture that way with your back, low back curved in anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be your active muscles holding it that way
right.
instead of a chair pushing it in.
Yeah.
And that would be better. But having the chair push it in is better than sitting with it rounded out.
That's true. One of the big ideas in the radio business back in the 80s was they started designing their studios so that the announcers were standing up while they were working. Made you breathe better, made you feel better. You didn't.
And it was probably easier on your back.
It was a lot easier on your back.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it just, maybe we should all start working standing up.
Actually, that is getting to be a little bit more, I won't say it's a fad yet, but it's getting to be a little bit more accepted, is to arrange stand-up workstations,
mm-hmm.
Even computer workstations where you're standing. And there was also a phase, especially through the 1980s and early part of the 1990s, where they were selling kneeling chairs. You still had a rest for your bottom, but your knees were on a kneeler that was kind of up maybe about a foot off the floor.
Right.
And that was...
And there was no back to it.
No back to it, so that it was a lot better posture for your low back, but it's still probably not as good as
standing.
Now, the big problem that a lot of people have with chronic back pain is they've already got to that point where prolonged standing is one of the worst things they can do. And for them, I'd say the kneeling chair is still a whole lot better than sitting.
I get the impression, looking over some of the research materials here, that you really, for lower back pain, there's an awful lot of things you can do at home, over-the-counter type things that you can do to help alleviate the pain.
That's right. I mean, let's go back before we leave the exercise. I guess we left it. Let's get back to it.
Okay.
Just getting out and taking a walk every day mm-hmm. is one of the best things you can do as a preventative measure
right.
for back problems. And I usually advise people to take their walk in the morning as soon as they get up.
Okay.
Go out and take a good brisk walk. Even in the worst days of the summer, it's usually nice in the early morning.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get out and walk. And in the wintertime, unless you're in a really brutal climate, or certainly if there's ice on the ground,
right.
you know, don't do it. But unless you're in a brutal climate part yeah. of the country, that's not a majority of the days. So on the days that it allows, get out and take a good brisk walk.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole lot better. And then the benefit of doing it in the morning is you still only have to get ready for your day once.
Right. Right.
And once it's done for the day. Nothing is going to come up and get in the way to make you postpone it for the day.
You know, if that is indeed the a great technique, I would think we should do some research and see if dog owners suffer less lower back pain than other people.
Actually, that's been researched indirectly.
That's another great idea down the tubes.
Not necessarily on dog owners, but just looking at people to get out and walk like that with pets or for whatever reason, and it really does work. So now getting to your back to the other part of the question is
right.
what do you do at home after you've got the back problem? I guess especially if you've had the back problem for years.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things you can do to help yourself? And probably the single biggest thing, what I recommend more than anything else, is an inversion table.
Okay.
That this is a table that stands up at a slant.
Mm-hmm.
For our listeners that might not be familiar, we do have some information about inversion tables on our website at painlessliving.com.
Okay.
But it's a table that's at a slant. You lean against the table and then buckle your ankles
mm-hmm.
and tilt the table until your head is lower than your feet. And what that does is it stretches you. It lets gravity stretch your body, and you can feel the traction as your spine starts to get longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts traction on those discs, those joints, those ligaments, all those things in there that can cause pain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the single best things you can do to help relieve the pain that you've got. And if you've got a long-standing back problem, that's one of the things you can do that's most effective at keeping it from getting worse over time.
Okay.
If you just make that a part of your daily routine.
That sounds good. And the inversion table, like you say, the information is on the website, painlessliving.com, because some people are probably saying, you know, it's not quite as drastic as hanging upside down, but it could be if you need
it. A lot of people do like the feeling
mm-hmm.
of hanging by their ankles when they're on the inversion table. And if you like that, it gives you the opportunity to do a little bit of range of motion, you know, twisting or turning, things like that, which can help. But for the traction aspect, you don't have to go that far back.
Yeah.
You just have to go so that your feet is enough lower, your head is enough lower than your feet so that you can feel gravity stretching you. And then you can usually set the inversion table to stop at that point so it doesn't go
right.
any further back.
And hopefully there are handles where you can very easily right yourself. I would hate to be stuck upside down on an inversion table home alone.
Well, I've got a story. It's not a bad story because all's well that ends well.
Right.
But I did have a person that came and saw me in my mm-hmm. office, and I recommended an inversion table. So the man went out with his adult daughter, and they bought an inversion table and took it home and set it up, and then the daughter left to go back to her house.
Mm-hmm.
And the man got in his new inversion table and realized that when he wanted to get out, that he hadn't watched the CD that came with it. And the instructions were just out of reach, and he couldn't figure out how to get out of the inversion table. Fortunately, his daughter had forgotten something, came back, so he was only there for about 20 minutes.
But it was a rather panic-stricken 20 minutes, well, I can imagine.
The thing is, the technique to get out is really very easy. Mm-hmm. It's very simple, and once you know what it is, you can do it very easily at home, alone,
right,
on your own.
Yeah.
But I'll advise anybody, when you first get your inversion table, if it comes with a CD, watch the CD.
Read the instructions.
Read the instructions. Yeah, and it might not be a bad idea the first time you use it to have those instructions right there with you.
Don't try this at home alone. One of the other treatments that you recommend here is pool. Is
billiards?
Yeah, I was going to ask, 9-ball, will that work, or 8-ball, or what? No, but swimming?
Swimming. Even people that can't stand and bear weight for long periods of time because of either their back being so bad or maybe they've also got bad knees or something like that that keeps them from doing other types of exercise, exercising in a pool is great.
Right.
Because the water supports your weight. You can be a lot more flexible. You can do a lot more things than you can do on dry land.
Yeah. In fact, I have some elderly parents, and that's one of the classes they take is water aerobics.
That music tells me we're about halfway through with the show, so this is your time to call 888-440-4442, and we'll take your calls right after the break.
It's the Painless Living Show. To be part of the program, call now. 1-888-440-4442.
Sounds good. Folks are running to the phones right now, even as we speak.
Hopefully. It's a stampede.
It is. The topic, low back pain. And the good news is that it is eminently treatable and fixable, at least enough
well,
to
usually
make the pain
fixable.
Go away.
You know, what we tend to hear about is all the horror stories about people that in their attempts to get fixed have gotten worse.
Yeah.
But the reality is that if you look across the population, that's really a very small percentage of the people that have back problems. Most people do find solutions, if not to make it go away completely, to make it where they can continue on with normal everyday life.
I've heard that story most often from people who use a massage as a technique to fix their back pain. It's a temporary fix, and then it comes back with a vengeance.
Well, but there's no doubt about it. You feel real good after you've had a massage.
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of anybody offhand that's ever told me they felt worse after a massage.
Exactly. Exactly. But let's talk. We've touched on it a few times for different ailments, but the especially now they're being advertised, the braces, the copper-infused things that you just strap around your torso for support to the back. Is giving support to the back prior to or during physical exertion going to help eliminate the chances of your back hurting terribly when you're done?
I'm going to say yes, but I'm also going to say that I think that the number one way that helps is because the fact that it's there serves as a reminder to the person that they're supposed to be conscious of what they're doing.
Okay.
But, hey, it doesn't matter how it works, just the fact that it does work.
Yeah.
I think we went through a stage, trying to think back, probably around 25 years ago, where every company's HR department, their workers' comp insurer, tell them to fit everybody with one of those Velcro wraparound braces, and it's a lot of expense for the company, and it ended up not changing the claims
rates
status any.
Yeah.
But for those of us, if you're ever walking around in those places, you see that everyone had their brace undone.
Yeah.
They were wearing it as a garment rather than as a brace. So I'm sure that's why the claim status was unaffected. So there are some other key components besides possession.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing, if you could, for my personal edification and those listening also, I know my grandmother always used to complain about how her sciatica was acting up. What is that? I noticed that's part of the back situation.
Yes, sciatica almost always comes from a bad back, and it's because, first of all, the nerve that goes down your leg all the way from your back down to your toe is your sciatic nerve. Mm-hmm. So sciatica is that when that nerve gets pinched, and it almost always gets pinched right where it starts in the low back. Mm-hmm. That's what causes the sciatica.
And is that manifest itself as back pain, or is that a lot of times?
Oh, it
leg
can be
pain?
Back pain. It can be low leg pain. It can be hip pain. It can be knee pain. Anywhere along the way, everywhere along the way, mm-hmm. a lot of different ways that sciatica can present itself. But if you've got sciatica, it's back to the inversion table that I was talking about. Probably the single best thing you can do at home to relieve the pain from sciatica.
Right. And with an inversion table, also, the blood flows to your head, making you smarter, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
There you go. And you've got some, maybe we can go into greater detail here with the neurological causes of back pain. Now, that's something that would need to be treated.
Well, sciatica is one of those things that's a neurologic cause of back pain.
Okay.
But when you rupture a disc, if the disc ruptures around most of the way around the disc, it causes no problems at all. The only time it causes problems is if it ruptures where it pushes against a nerve structure, like the sciatic nerve or the sac that has the spinal fluid and all your nerve roots in it. So nerve compression or nerve pinching is a big cause of back pain. And it doesn't just have to be the sciatic nerve. It can be the little nerves that end up going to the backbones themselves.
Right. Another question. Is there such a thing as a sacroiliac, or is that just a word my dad made up to sound smart?
Probably a little of both. Yes. Sacroiliac has to refer to something else. And
okay.
You have a sacrum. That's the part between your low back and your tailbone.
Okay.
That bone in between is your sacrum. And the iliac bone is the big bone that makes up your pelvis on both sides.
Okay.
So those attach together at a joint. You have a sacroiliac joint. And then you've got ligaments that hold those together. Those mm-hmm. could also be part of what your father was referring to as the sacroiliac. And then sometimes the sacroiliac is just used to not have to say but.
Okay, in retrospect, that probably was what the cause of the whole thing was here anyhow. So,
okay, we do have a caller here calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Joanne, you're on the air at the Painless Living Show. How can I help you this morning? Joanne?
I understand why I can't hardly hear you.
Oh, okay. Is that any better?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Okay. Now, what can I do to help you?
Well, I wanted to a heart bypass surgery on the inversion table. A person who's had heart, surgery. My granddaughter had a bypass surgery.
Okay.
And when she tried to get on the inversion table, when she was, I don't know if she was completely upside down or not, but she couldn't. It hurt her so bad that she. Her husband had to get her off of there right away.
Yeah.
And we wonder why that may have happened.
Okay, there's a couple of reasons why, but the most common reason is that when you have heart surgery these days, modern heart surgery is done by sawing the breastbone in half and then spreading it apart to be able to reach the heart to do the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that breastbone is put back together, it's put back together with wires, not stitches like you would have in your skin, but these are pieces of wire.
She had those removed as well. She had to have those removed.
Okay. After the sternum is healed and those are removed, what happens is you can have scar tissue there that as it formed as part of the normal healing process from the surgery. And as you tilt upside down, where gravity starts changing the way things move, like your chest starts to move up farther than your on the outside than on the inside. Your ribs come up. Mm-hmm. And that can pull on that scar tissue in a direction that it hasn't been pulled on since it was formed. And that's what causes the pain. And that can be whether the wires are still in there or not.
I see.
So for your daughter to get traction, the best thing instead of an inversion table would be to get a traction device for her low back or her neck, or she could get one for each. And she would do those just lying down on her bed or on the floor, something like that.
Okay, and what'd you call that again?
Well, you could get a lumbar traction device.
Traction, okay.
T-R-A-C-T-I-O-N, traction, or a cervical traction device. And there are several types. A lot of them are available by prescription, and your insurance should help cover a portion of that. The good thing about those is that they're very small and portable, unlike the inversion table. So if she's going to travel or something, she could take it with her.
But so then could she ever get on the inversion table, do you think?
Well, the short answer to that is going to be no, but she probably could if she did it very slowly over long periods of time, and I'm talking years. Uh-huh. She could condition herself where her body would, as that scar tissue gets formed and reformed as part of the normal turnover process of the years, it could get more elastic or stretch to different directions. And it works similar to if somebody's had an injury to a joint and the joint gets very stiff. They can do some rehabilitation and some exercises that over long periods of time can restore a lot of that motion. And the same thing could be done, but it's not anything that's going to happen fast.
Okay, well, because I think when she tried the inversion table, she had, it was probably a year and a half to 2 years after her surgery.
So it was pretty tough scar tissue.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. I'll have to tell her that. I'll have to tell her you told me.
Okay, please do. All right.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Joanne, for listening, and thank you for calling.
Okay. Yes. 888-440-4442, the phone number. I guess as long as it comes from Dr. Cassaro, there is much more credibility behind the story there.
Well, it's better than saying than her mother going and just saying, "Oh, Mom, you think you know everything."
You find out, however, the older you get, the more intelligent your parents become. You know.
Yeah.
You realize that they did know all that stuff.
When you go off to college, they get an education.
Yeah. Funny how that works. At what point does back pain necessitate surgery to fix? Do you need to exhaust everything, or should you get checked out first? And that's a good question.
Well,
you can ponder the answer.
I was going to say the best time for surgery is after the break.
888-440-4442. Still time to get on in.
When we come back, we'll be in the last segment of the show, so this is your time to call.
It's like an office visit without the copay. The Painless Living Show.
You can get in and ask any question you need to at 888-440-4442. And this is the last segment of the show, lower back pain, the topic. But we can discuss anything that you might need.
All pain questions are welcome, including getting an inversion table after cardiac bypass surgery, like we just talked about before the break.
That's right. See now how much time and potential extra pain we've saved any cardiac surgery patient. There you go. Something to think about. One of the things I've seen advertised on television is, I believe it's Shaq, is advertising this little gizmo that you put on your back, and I guess it has a battery pack with it or something. I don't know. Maybe it's solar powered, but it's got the electrical stimulation. Is that?
Electrical stimulation is usually pretty good. They've had TENS units available. TENS stands for transcutaneous electrical neural stimulation.
Which is why they call it a TENS unit.
Yes.
Yeah.
TENS. A lot easier. Anyway, those have been around for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And they really do work well. They work best used intermittently.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't expect it to take away 100% of the pain, but it can really make your back feel a whole lot better, especially right after the exertion. It can help. It's like a massage. It helps to relax those muscles, breaks the spasm, things like that.
I guess this is a good at-home unit to use, huh?
Fantastic. That's right. We've got another caller on the line now. We've got Jim calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Jim, you're on the air at the Painless Living Show. How can I help you today?
Well, you can't help me, but I do have, I think, an interesting comment.
Okay.
I was going to a chiropractor about once a month for what's not a chronic back pain, but enough that it was bothering me. And I began to notice I was driving a lot at the time. And I began to notice that when I was getting out of the car, I put my foot down, my left foot, put all my weight on it and turned my body, and I would always have a pain. So I began to sit, turn around with both, put both feet on the pavement, and then get up. And I did the same thing getting into the car, and I never had to go back to the chiropractor again.
Oh, he's probably just pulling his hair out right now that you went and told all the listeners about that technique. Well, what happened was when you changed the way that you distributed your weight by putting it on both feet instead of just one at a time, you changed the way that something sensitive in your back was being pulled, and that's why it doesn't hurt.
Well, that's
a good technique.
I just wanted to pass that on, and I've told a number of friends about it, and it was just a suggestion.
Yes, that is a good technique.
Enjoyed your show.
Well, thank you for listening, Jim. Thank you for calling, and appreciate the comment.
Yeah, that is a...
You know, something else about what Jim just said is the chiropractor. We were talking earlier in the show about the weekend warrior.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a weekend warrior and you've got these recurrent back problems, another one of the things that you should probably consider is getting a chiropractor really close, because
befriend one now.
Yes. Well, the thing is, getting some simple non-invasive treatment on a regular basis beats the heck out of needing to have surgery, like you were asking about before the break, later on down the line. And it's the simple things that you do at the time when they're appropriate that prevent the major maintenance. I mean, just think about it with your car. If you get the oil changed on a regular basis and keep the maintenance up in other ways, you can avoid a lot of those really costly repairs.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with your body.
And I have heard stories from people who have gone through back surgery, and it seems to be the most uncomfortable medical treatment that there is. The back surgery just seems to have more horror stories as far as being uncomfortable as a patient than does almost any other kind of surgery.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with that, but I'm going to point out that the only people that you hear from are the ones that feel like things didn't go well.
Yeah.
The other 95 or whatever percent of people where everything went well, you might even not even know they had surgery, because they're back enjoying life and they're not talking to anybody about all their problems.
Yeah. Yeah, it just meant to going through it itself, the situation of having to undergo the surgery is not as comfortable. But again, let's get back, because there are so many things that you can
get
do.
Get back. I like that.
See, I'm trying to bring these up as much as I can. That's, you know, why I'm making the big bucks. I try to do these kind of things. Sometimes it works, sometimes not so much. But the self-treatment, the precursors to back pain, the ways that you can make sure that you're going to be able to sustain whatever it is that usually causes back pain, you know, get yourself skilled up and ready for it, whether it be through exercise or diet or sleeping correctly or any of the steps that you can take to basically head off the potential of back pain down the road.
Yeah, I'd say that the ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Somebody profound.
Can we
I think
write
it
that
was Benjamin Franklin. Yeah. Somebody profound came up with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, are there specific techniques? I know regular chiropractic can do it, the inversion table.
Well,
can
and
do
regular
it.
Regular exercise, and that regular exercise doesn't need to be strenuous, it just needs to be regular. So, I mean, you can do strenuous exercise, right, especially if you're, you know, a really peak of fitness. Yeah, you know, exercise your potential.
And you're not an exercise physiologist, I understand, but do you recommend any specific types of exercise that specifically for back? Strengthen the back muscles?
I'm going to sound like a broken record here. Take a walk daily.
Okay.
A brisk walk, a mile within 20 minutes every day. Then after that, I wouldn't say instead of, but after that, the next best thing, and probably in the long run, one of the best things, is yoga.
Really?
In fact, I have taken care of people that have had horrendous back problems, including multiple surgeries, and been, you know, almost invalids, that start doing yoga. And after a few years of doing yoga on a regular daily basis, they're pain-free, medicine-free, doing very well. Yoga is a fantastic way to rehabilitate your back, because you use muscles in yoga that you don't use in other exercises or in your daily activities. And it helps you to restore motion to ligaments that used to be elastic and they're not anymore. It helps them to become elastic again.
Well, the fact that you're using muscles that you don't use normally means that yoga won't be comfortable the first couple of weeks.
It's something I said over time, over years. Yes, you have to work at it long, regular, persistent.
Right.
But it's also very difficult to injure yourself doing yoga.
Really?
So that's a good, safe approach to take. And then the third type of exercise I'll mention, and this is really for anybody, but especially for people that for whatever other health reason they have, they can't do a lot of other types of exercise, getting in the water, exercising in the water. It can be in a regular, formal water arthritis exercise program. It could be some sort of a conditioning program like swimming laps, or it could be just walking back and forth across the pool with the resistance of the water.
You know, a
lot of things you can do to help your back, or to help your whole body, really, in the water.
That's great. So that I guess then that YMCA membership is looking better and better all the time.
Yeah, but just in case, skydiving would not be on that list. Yeah, that's not one of the things you do to rehabilitate your back. Hanging from that parachute, there's a downside to that also.
Yeah, it's not the falling, it's the landing that'll get you. Any other, you know, sage advice for those of us who may be getting past our prime, so to speak? And
well, I like the way you segue from one thing to another. Sage advice, sage being seasoning for food. Yes, what you eat can make a big difference in how you feel. It's not that the food causes the pain. I'm not saying that. But it can make a big difference in how much pain you feel.
Okay.
The top of the list as far as things that are going to make your pain worse, no matter where it's coming from, is sugar.
Okay.
So cut out the sugar, and then right behind the sugar would be grains. That's your bread, cereal, and pasta. Anything from wheat, corn, rice, barley, oats, and rye. And I'm not talking about gluten-free. I'm talking about grain-free.
Grain-free, yeah.
Because the grains are very starchy. And grain starches tend to be worse than non-grain starches like potatoes, as far as pain goes anyway.
And again, those starches turn to sugar in your body, so it's that whole sugar thing again.
Yeah, basically. So essentially we're probably talking about the same thing, but you know, a lot of people said, well, I'm not eating any sugar, and they're sitting down, they got biscuits for breakfast, they got bread on the sandwich at lunch, they got biscuits for supper.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess Southerners must feel more pain than the Yankees do then, huh? More biscuits, more gravy. Here you go.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes it's worth it.
Amen to that. All right. Been a very instructive hour, sir.
Yes, and we will be back here again next week at 11 o'clock for the Painless Living. That's 11 o'clock Eastern time.
Right.
for the Painless Living Show, and we hope you're with us also. We'll be here to take your questions on whatever pain is bothering you.
That's right. I'm your co-host, John Ashton.
And I'm your host, Dr. Michael Cassaro.
Thanks for listening. We will see you next week right here.